Hello and welcome everyone to an incredibly special episode of the official podcast for the American Association for Nudist Recreation.
That is not what we're a podcast of. We are clearly not a nudist podcast.
How could you know? It's an audio podcast. I could be completely naked, surrounded by naked people right now, recording this podcast.
Well, this podcast is supported in part by GatheringMagic.com, your source for Magic the Gathering news and content.
Yeah, and
which is not a nudist organization or website. In fact, it's completely unrelated at all to nudism, unless you count some of like the early Magic art that's out there.
Yeah, I would guess nudists would probably have just binders full of Earthbind. I'd say that's probably one of the more
BSDM.
Okay, yeah, I guess, yeah. Nudists, you just like to let it hang out and have a good time. Because these are not nudist colonies, they are resorts. So we're going to talk about that later, because apparently Adam and I have a very potentially different family-raising vibe in regards to nudism, which I'm fascinated to hear how this is going to come out.
Let's not put words in my mouth before that any have come out.
Adam said he was pro-nudism before the podcast.
We'll cover that then. But it's important to note that we are down a man. But unlike the Marines and other highly trained military organizations, we don't really care. We're going to run this. It's a two-man crew this week. Conley. He's ideally winning Grand Prix Chicago after his car didn't make it there for him.
I mean, did he think he'd actually make it in a car? I mean, if you really go by the history of him with any sort of motorized transport, there's no chance he was going to make it. Like, he would have to be driving a car, towing another car, in order to ensure that he makes it to Chicago.
I don't know. I drove an 87 LeBaron to Chicago and back in 10 hour straight drives from central Pennsylvania in 2006. So I guess maybe the reliability of vehicles just isn't what it is. But what's important to know is that we don't have Conley. So we don't have his sweetie swig swagger. But we do have a Magic 2013 preview.
Magic 2013, we're going back into the time machine.
You know, oh my God. So it must be something in my brain, because I literally keep typing like 2013 every time we talk 2015.
Hey, you're just
like,
thinking about that. You're just thinking about that nudist resort. You just can't get your mind out of it.
Yeah, totally just distracted. You know, the curves of the three just keeps pulling me in. But it's Magic 2015, the new core set, the Evil Garrick, all that jazz going on. Let's start there.
Share. Why are we talking about this right now, Adam? Share with me why we're talking about M15 at this current point in time.
Well, because it's preview season. We're going to find out about this new set. Woo! And we have our card, Gather Magic's official preview card. I share it with Tom because I trust him and I want him to talk about it with. Yeah. So we talked about the Soul of Zendikar, Soul of Ravnica last week, and we got confirmation on that, and it's all great. This is a card that I did not expect, and when I saw it, I got really excited because it's something I wasn't expecting. It feels right, because it's something that I missed when we saw the Titans the first time around, and it's a card that's just could totally be a card you need to be aware of in Commander. It's Soul of New Phyrexia. So it's just like the other souls, a 6 mana for a 6/6. This one has trample.
So right there,
it's a colorless 6/6 for 6 with trample. It's just, it's a green fatty that any deck can have, but its abilities are the Nutter Butters. I love this card. 5 mana, activated ability, permanents you control gain indestructible until end of turn. So at instant speed for 5 mana, just nope, can't touch this.
Did you mean to do an MC Hammer reference? If you didn't, it was twice as good.
Do it.
Can't touch this. Da, 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 da.
So maybe I'll have my buddy Eric paint MC Hammer on this card.
That would be great, yes. Let's put some big parachute pants on our whatever skeletal Elish Norn that's on the arch here.
And just like the other souls, it's got 5 mana, exile Soul of New Phyrexia from your graveyard, permanents you control gain indestructible until end of turn. So it's just one of those general all-purpose, you know, value cards for Commander. You know, it's probably going to get focus fired down as soon as it hits the table. It's kind of like a Spiritbreaker Behemoth from Shards of Alara. Spiritbreaker Behemoth is indestructible 5/5 and has an ability for one colorless mana target creature with power 5 or greater becomes indestructible, gains indestructible endurance. It's basically the same ability, but just for creatures. This is just all permanence. So Planar Cleansing, Hero's Downfall, all of those cards that could normally deal with things like Planeswalkers, which are really annoying sometimes, this protects those too. And it's an artifact, and it's this, you know, colorless card. And so that was one of the things that I felt was missing in the original Titan cycles. Where's the artifact Titan? You know, where's the colorless one? And this time we got it.
Yeah, I mean, so it's, I mean, obviously from a casual side, it's, you know, like you said, colorless tends to be really nice because you can then use, if you get one, two, or more of them, you can actually use them in any deck. For Commander, it's nice. You can literally throw it in anything. It's not legendary, so you can go nuts. And any card, especially like big multiplayer Commander, any card that lets you potentially do some just crazy shenanigans with, like you mentioned, any sort of sweeping spell, anything else, you're going to have fun. And like you said, they're going to take this thing out first when they see it hit the table. Unless you have five open mana, and then it becomes a challenge.
Ideally, you're going to have five open mana. And I like it that it has trample. So one of the things I found in like my blue decks and like my artifact decks is there are some creatures with trample and some creatures with flying and kind of, you know, artifact flying dragon type stuff. But it was kind of hard to punch through. Like you really relied on strictly the sort of like fire and ice, sort of light and shadow, those protection effects to cut through. With trample, you can just pump it with anything. I mean, you could use modular and dump a whole bunch of +1/+1 counters on this guy. And suddenly you have this, you know, a de facto indestructible 2020 that protects itself, you know, and you just get to like slam over anybody with it. It just feels like one of those kind of like it's a utility creature in multiple dimensions, which is what I like. Like you don't need to use it as a protect all my stuff effect. Like you can just start beating people with it. And that's probably going to be good enough on its own.
So for everybody that's listening, if you are excited for this card, if there's a combo that you're excited either in Constructed, Casual, Commander, email us. We love getting emails, and it's mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com. So let us know what you think of Sol Nuphrexia. If you pull up it's going to be all over Gathering Magic. If you pull up the show notes for this podcast, you will see this card, so you can check it out for yourself. And I'm still wrapping my mind around seeing a little hologram foil on these M15, like, mythics and rares. It still just looks, it looks like I'm looking at an Upper Deck baseball card. That's going to take me a while to get used to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the most mentally different visual change. Like I've seen some of the basic lands because they had them at some events already, some Grand Prix and the Pro Tour, and the bottom frame doesn't really feel that different. Like it looks like on a screen, it looks way different than it looks in your hand.
Okay.
But I haven't seen any of the cards with the little foil dot, what that foil looks like in person. Like I think that's going to be the biggest thing. Like for me, it looks like it's in like an old school Ultra Pro sleeve.
Yeah, I don't know. In my mind, they make them feel more valuable. I know, just because there's a little bit of foil on there, it makes them seem special. And it seems like good timing was obviously if you go back 6 months to a year, there's lots of counterfeit concerns where this will be nice for Wizards and players, collectors going forward in the future, where it does make it much more difficult.
For now.
Yeah, people are getting better, but at least you'd be like, does that foil look real or not? And you'll be a little bit more prepared. So, yeah, Adam, it's an awesome preview. So Gathering Magic, they definitely got lucked out on this one. Yeah, the preview season is still, you know, we were kind of badgering Conley last episode about, you know, he's working on some mysterious, potentially nudist-themed, you know, digital card game of some sort. And, you know, it feels like the preview cycle is, they've done it the same way now for a while. I'm curious to see how they may potentially, I guess, evolve this for the future. From your side, I mean, are you kind of happy with the current way that, you know, kind of previews are done, where they're sort of done sort of piecemeal to, you know, a bunch of the, you know, kind of big Magic sites? Obviously the Mothership does a bunch themselves. Or is there a different way that you could kind of envision them sort of previewing this card to get you super excited?
Like, I think, you know, so there's kind of like it's kind of like a balancing act, right? So what the whole preview plan is supposed to do, like any company, you know, teasing or previewing an upcoming product wants to do, is build excitement, to show you the really cool things, to give you kind of bite-sized teases that build up and up and up and up. And then suddenly it's like, you know, you see this whole thing, it makes you really excited. You're happy. You want it now. You pre-order it. You're excited to go to the events for it. It's to build momentum. And so like in the video game world, for example, you know, it's very, very cutthroat. You know, just like in the Magic community, video game websites are all over trying to find the next little bit of information about the next game and talking to developers and scrutinizing interviews. And, you know, when developers that speak another language do interviews in like their native language for like, you know, a Polish company or something like that, they may reveal unique pieces of information to that company, similar to how they, you know, the preview process that you see where different sites kind of get different pieces of information and it kind of spreads the love. And so what I think the biggest thing to keep in mind is I don't know if there's a better process out there, but I do know how horrific the New Phyrexia season was when basically all the cards were known, you know, a month before the set was out.
You're talking about what's it called, the guidebook? I'm trying to remember what they termed
basically an internal document of the set ended up being leaked you know, through an intermediary that was doing a magazine review, which obviously has print deadlines that they work ahead with. For anybody who's, you know, new to Magic or unfamiliar with that story, resulted in a couple of prominent players being banned, etc. Temporarily, you know, suspended, I should say. And it was it just really kind of took all the love out of things. Preview season kind of started and you know, at first it was kind of like this thing, like, let's just pretend, you know, nothing happened. Like, we haven't made a decision to change the plan, so everything's go. And then eventually, you know, Wizards decided, okay, we're going to go ahead and acknowledge that this happened and kind of make the best of it. But by the time the set came out, obviously everybody had time to kind of dissect it, begin playing it on, playtesting with it. And it just, you know, it didn't feel the same. And I think that's something that's really, really easy to forget is, you know, in that tension between, I want to know now, I want to see everything that's awesome. And, you know, we want to control every little tiny aspect of how you receive this and when you see things. And we think it's important that you don't know about certain cards until certain, you know, a certain period of time until the set's released. That in between there is kind of where we live. And I think that we're all happier knowing less until later than we are knowing everything up front.
Yeah, and the other sort of interesting dynamic to the New Phyrexia God Book, you know, just whole shenanigans was, like Kylie was mentioning, from a pro player standpoint, where, you know, knowing the cards, working with them, developing decks is part of your livelihood. It was a really odd moral ground about, do I stick to my guns that this is wrong, that this was leaked, or do I, like probably most of the other players, use this information to start preparing now? It was really interesting to sort of hear that, you know, how do you decide this when this is kind of what you do for your job?
And yeah. I think the argument there is a little thinner. I mean, you know, clearly if you have the information and it's like publicly available, I don't think there's any contest about using it or not. I think what the real, you know, something I really still grapple with, because one of the players, Guillaume Wafotapa, really great player. He had a great finish at just the most recent Pro Tour, very classic control player, typically all foil deck, islands. You know, if he can counter stuff, he's typically playing that kind of deck. He's very good at that. You know, he's a player that I respect his level of play, but, you know, he effectively had access to the information when it was not publicly available. You know, through his kind of testing relationship with Guillaume Matignon, which is where it came from, because he shared the information with Guillaume Wafotapa. Because Guillaume Matignon was writing for Lotus Noir, the magazine that was, you know, publishing information about the set. So, you know, both of those players ended up going to the finals of the Pro Tour, basically Pro Tour Mirrored and Besieged. It was Paris, I believe, but basically the Pro Tour right before the, if I remember correctly, the Pro Tour right before this happened. Obviously, when it was clear, you know, Matignon had access to the previous, at least, you know, at least the previous set or earlier that early, you know, kind of begs a very serious question is was he using this information for testing? And, you know, I don't think anybody really knows other than a handful of players, but, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with what happened and how certain players, you know, I feel used information that wasn't publicly available. And I think that's the real difference. So, like, for example, you know, obviously I write a column for Daily MTG and I see previews for my columns, you know, weeks before they go live, but I absolutely don't cross the streams and like, you know, cue them or share or tip anything off to, you know, for gathering magic stuff, because that's just like, you know, that's bad mojo. I mean, it's literally crossing the streams in Ghostbusters. Like, I'm just going to die. So
total platonic reversal.
Yeah. You know, and like, does everybody have sort of that same sense? Yeah. Yeah. I think that's much more, you know, that's kind of like where, you know, how honorable are you? You know, are you Ned Stark or are you Jaime Lannister? You know, if you're Game of Thrones fans here.
Okay, I was going to say, I don't know who either of those people are. Just
you know, it's just like, you know, like I'd like to believe, you know, I kind of handle things like Ned Stark. Like, the information that I know about this, I treat one way because it's, you know, that's the right thing to do. That's what I should be doing. And why would I obviously not do the absolute right thing, given what I know? Like, makes no sense to do something else. Like, I'm not going to do that because that's, you know, that's dishonorable, and I'm just really worried I'm going to get beheaded someday.
So there's a character in the Game of Thrones named Ned?
Eddard Stark, yes.
Wow, okay. That's a...
Oh, man, you're going to get slammed with emails about how do you not watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I to be honest, I'm not like a, I guess, a sword and sorcery fantasy guy. That's just has never been like a big draw, so I guess I have not actually read any of the Game of Thrones books. A lot of my friends have, and they are obsessed with that show. Just because I have not gotten into it, I may watch it in the future. But if I have that amount of time, I'm going to be watching. I'm trying to think, what do I? I don't watch a whole lot of actual like live television because they canceled Almost Human, and that pisses me off. But Brooklyn Nine, was it Brooklyn Nine-Nine? It's the one with. Never mind. My brain is mush. It's also hard because it's kind of the, besides Game of Thrones, there are not a lot of other TV shows that are actively being produced right now since it's kind of the summer off season. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a fantastic show. So I would recommend you watch that for the next season, especially if you're a Terry Crews fan. So talking about kind of morals, about doing the right thing, what are your thoughts? We were talking a little bit before the start of the podcast, Adam, about the, we made some predictions last podcast about the prices for the special rarity, the Power 9 for the MTGO Vintage Masters. And so far, it seems like we were potentially a little off. We're pretty early because currently the supply is still being, I don't know, supplies being produced as people bust open packs. But also the hype right now is really high. So I'm not sure, it's really hard to interpret what are the prices of these cards going to be in 1 month or 6 months?
I mean, you know, theoretically, I mean, Conley had really strong thoughts on it. And I, you know, I wasn't really quite sure other than, you know, given that we've had, you know, we've had four different Masters editions and all of those, as well as, I believe Modern Masters fell under this too, where there was no redemption and it was digital only, adding new cards while reprinting, you know, some important cards like dual lands, things like that. And so typically they've all followed a pattern of where, you know, the value of the newest of the new cards that get added to the game. So this would be all the special rarity cards and some of the other new additions from in Vintage Masters that aren't quite so sexy as a Black Lotus. Their value is peaked right when the set first hits because basically the volume of what's available only increases over time. Like it never effectively decreases, especially since it's so easy to convert your entire account into tickets by making everything tradable, going to bots, trading out for tickets, and then taking those tickets and moving them, to somebody else who needs them. You know, some people sell tickets and buy tickets and things like that all the time. So Conley thought, you know, like the foil Black Lotus, stuff like that would be thousands of dollars. And that might have been the case for like a day or two or a couple hours. But it seems like they've come down significantly. Like, you know, the site that you linked me to, like Shiny Black Lotus is basically 250 in foils, like effectively double that. You know, theoretically, as long as they're in stock, then those prices are valid. But, you know, they're going to go down basically until the set stops being available. You know, and then the real question is what is a foil Black Lotus in like 2 years when there's just no more Black Lotuses coming?
It's kind of curious because unlike real,
yeah,
because unlike paper magic, I mean, there's not going to be boxes of pack. Like you said, they might do some throwback drafts, but otherwise, there's not that there's going to be boxes of, you know, packs of beta or packs of unlimited for MTGO Vintage Masters being found in like someone's basement. And also cards in a lot of ways, they really, I mean, they can lay dormant in an account, but they can't really be destroyed. So I'd say it's hard to kind of assess these long term because it's not a physical paper product. Were there any cards? Oh, go ahead.
I'm just agreeing. Yeah, it's just it's a little different and weird. I mean, because the other thing is like those dormant accounts. Like, what is different from paper though is like accounts are dormant, so the cards are never destroyed, which is good. But if that account never gets accessed again, the cards are, you know, it's de facto destruction. Like some accounts, mom is never going to go and clean out the account's closet and put them at a garage sale for, you know, somebody to find. It's just never going to sit there. Those bits are locked into the server forever.
Yeah. And also, I guess I've never done like a deep dive on like the terms of service on, you know, for Magic Gathering Online. I would be curious to see if there is any language about, you know, say we have these products that are, you know, truly limited. They are only produced in a certain fashion. I mean, when they delete accounts, would they ever like release those cards in the future? You know, like, what do you do with that? I assume
if you buy it, it's been a while since I've seen like a deep dive in the terms of service. Usually it comes up from paranoid people every now and then on Reddit. Because like all digital games effectively have terms of service that read like, hey, if your account can be closed and deleted or destroyed at any time with no recourse or recompense available, because, you know, this is an at will arrangement. Like, we're letting you use this. Here are the rules you need to follow. We're going to update them at any time we want for any reason, for anything at all. And there's not much you can do about it, is pretty much what the terms always read for everything. But as far as I know, there's no like reclamation clause. Like, they could add it if they want. Say, hey, if you haven't logged in like 5 years, what we're going to do is we're going to take your cards and lottery them out among active players.
Yeah, so, like
theoretically,
how cool
they could like repack cards or something like that.
Make it a draft, like repo draft, where they just take all the reclaimed cards, they throw them into random packs, boom, you know, repo drafts.
Yeah, so you know, I think that sounds like, it sounds good for players that are like, hey, I don't want somebody to like buy 100 Black Lotuses, like just keep buying every Black Lotus they can, and then going dormant for 3 years, and then selling the Lotuses later. Which I don't think anybody really does. I mean, you know, like any market where the, you know, there's fungible value, there's going to be market activity and speculation to, you know, take advantage of arbitrage and, you know, value, you know, the changes in value over time, et cetera. You know, without getting into that discussion, you know, I think it would be really silly to buy 100 Black Lotuses and then do nothing with them for 3 years. But I don't think that
if you want
I don't think it would be right for Wizards to go, hey, we've updated our terms of service. By the way, because you're inactive, you've never been able to see those terms of service. Oh, and while you didn't see that change of service, because we're allowed to change it whenever we want, we just went ahead and cleaned up your collection, tidied it up a little bit. So those Black Lotuses that you were sitting on, they're actually, you know, distributed, you know, at random across the active player base. So, you know, welcome back. Like, I just don't see that as like a reclamation clause. Just doesn't make sense.
I can dream though. I can dream from my repo drafts at some point in Magic Gathering Online's future.
I mean, I think trying to think of what it's been called. Like, I want to say like a dirty draft or a junk draft. Like, but that's kind of like derogatory terms. But like, you know, like if you've done a bunch of drafts and like you've got these rares that just aren't that exciting, they're not good and constructed, they're not good and limited, like theoretically you could do like you could repack your own packs for drafting again. You know, like, I know there are people that do that, like whatever crummy cards that they don't need for constructed, they'll just, you know, make new booster packs and draft it again later. You know, I think it would be great if we could do something like that on Magic Online, where everybody ponies up, you know, cards, and then you can do that. Like, that's a reject rare draft, another name, but everybody brings like 45 rares they don't really like, that they don't want, they don't have value for, and then you shuffle them all together and make packs, and you draft this really horrific format where like all the removal costs like 8 mana, and like you're super happy with like a 6/6 that only has like a poor ability or like a slight drawback.
Yeah, that's what, again, as they go for in the future, I mean, I hope that they continue to, from the Magic Gathering Online perspective, really, I guess, embrace that this is a online digital game. You could do some crazy, interesting things. They're testing the war. I mean, we're getting these master sets, which it feels like in my mind, Wizards of the Coast 5 years ago, I'm surprised that they would have been thinking down this road. that they'd be releasing a MTGO set that has a Black Lotus, you know, Ancestral Recall, the Moxes. I don't think that was even in their mind frame at that point.
I would disagree with that. To use Conley's words there, you know, I think that they've known for a long time that true vintage had serious holes for online accessibility. They had the classic format, which is just basically like, it was like vintage-like, but it didn't have obviously all the Power 9 and some other key cards that are used in vintage. And it was a problem that they had with like Legacy for a long time as well, until they went and basically released Mirage Forward and used Masters Editions to fill in a bunch of those holes. I think they knew where they were going. I think it just, you know, I think they just wanted to be really careful that they got these rarities right. And so seeing like Black Lotus is a $250 card and Ancestral Recall is $100, you know, most of the Moxes, you know, $70-$80.
But why? Why respect the cost of the paper cards? This is completely different. I guess my mind.
No. What I'm saying is like seeing these prices, like they are not as astronomical as paper, like, and completely independent of that. Like they feel like they're, you know, they feel like other really rare cards on Magic Online, like Wasteland from Tempest, for example. One of the cornerstones of Legacy is a really pricey card. Force of Will was that way for a while. Like those are the barriers to the format, and Force of Will is in Vintage Masters, if I'm remembering correctly. Are identifying where they have these holes to the format, and they're finding, you know, it takes them a while, but they are actively finding ways to fill them.
Is that, I mean, have we, you know, obviously right now people are primarily drafting this, is there an uptick in people interested in playing Vintage online? I guess I just wasn't sure if that was a format. Right now players wouldn't think MTGO for Vintage. That just wouldn't be where the draws.
You didn't have the cards. Like you didn't have, like, you know, all the power, you know, all the power more or less is, you know, a critical part of the Vintage format. So I know, for example, one of the Gathering Magic writers was playing Vintage this week on Magic Online and cut videos. So we're going to see some online Vintage.
I guess it's
happening. It can only start this week as people started selling the power that they opened and people started buying it. I believe Luis Scott Vargas, earlier this week tweeted, you know, like basically thanking, you know, I think it was MTGO Traders, one of the major online retailers, like, hey, thanks for helping me track down all the power. I can do Vintage videos now. Like this, you know, the existence of these cards online was the barrier. And now it's not there. And people, I think, are at least in the interim, while it's still new and exciting, I think the people that can get into it are going to, and they're going to have a good time showing us.
Okay. It still feels like they address the barrier of the cards not existing, but it seems like unless there's a major change, the prices are still going to be a huge barrier. If you're talking about in relation to the power, I mean, like, it's pretty awesome that dual lands are $4 to $5. Like, that is amazing when you're talking about playing these formats. But I guess I would argue, you know, $100 plus for like a Mox Sapphire and Ancestral Recall, that's still, I guess, in Paper Magic, you have Jaces and stuff, but that's still a pretty big money barrier for somebody who wants to potentially fresh get into the Vintage format. It's obviously no different in Paper Magic. It's probably a whole lot worse. I was just curious why they felt like they needed to stick to, I guess, the rarity that these cards exist in Paper Magic, when these really are two completely different beasts.
You know, they had an article kind of explaining, and basically it's like the Power 9 kind of has this mystique, right? It's a very rare collectible. Wizards basically has a public agreement in place, you know, more or less, that says we're not going to make these again. Like, we will not print another Black Lotus that you can take into a sanctioned event and play it. You know, that's basically what the agreement is, what the reserve list is. It's, you know, it's way more than Black Lotus, but it's this whole list of cards. Yeah, I think the idea is that power, you know, it's not legal in Commander, it's not legal in Legacy. Like, it is only this niche format, and it's supposed to be something special. Like, they, you know, that was the description that they gave in the article kind of setting up, is they wanted to maintain that these cards have this mystique, that they are just difficult to find, difficult to access. You only ever need to own one copy. Like, even on Magic Online, like, you need one copy. You can make any number of decks with it. It's the only legal number that you can have in a deck. Like, literally the only format that you can play more of more than one of power in is you either have Chandelar and you're running some DOS box.
Yes, I'm nodding my head.
And you're just like, there are no deck building rules there. Or you're playing basically, there are no sanctioned events for it, but like basically wide open, like no rules barred, no holds barred, constructed open classic, whatever it's called, where you can run four Black Lotuses if you want. and I think that type of degeneracy, it's attractive to some players as like a novelty. Kind of like Powered Cube was a novelty and kind of wore off quick. The fact that you only need one copy of these cards does put a rider on the pricing.
I mean, that's a good point. I guess I hadn't thought that it's very easy in MTGO to use a single card in a number of decks. While in Paper Magic, that'd be a huge pain in the butt.
It's different for most other cards, because once you hit four, like four copies is usually your typical rider, but you only need one copy of all the cards on the restricted list. And there aren't that many cards on there that if it comes off the restricted list would suddenly totally change the format. Most of the time, if it's restricted, like it's probably not going to be unrestricted or taken off that kind of de facto ban. And obviously none of the anti cards are on Magic Online anyway. So that's kind of like going to throttle it as well. But the other thing that people kind of overlook is part of what makes Magic so awesome. And this is like a great discussion to have Conley as a part of, so I don't want to take away from that too much. But one of the things that I always advocate and point out is Magic is not every Magic card. Like nobody has an intrinsic right to have easy access at whatever they consider affordable for them. Could be pennies, could be dollars, could be, paychecks, whatever you consider that, wherever your value situation is for cards, nobody has a right to just have access to any card they want at any time for whatever they consider affordable. Like, that's just not how Magic works. Like, because cards are collectible and sometimes difficult to find, and there's different versions, and some of them are rarer than others, and the collectability of, there's effectively a limited number of these, and effectively you can't get them as easily as maybe you would like to, makes Magic engaging. It makes it interesting. It's why all of the games have some sort of throttling element to make cards harder to get. So even games like digital games, like Soulforge or Hearthstone, where like you can effectively break down cards, extra cards you don't need, and build a card that you want or buy packs with it later. There's still that barrier of, I can't get the card that I want. I'm limited on what I can just instantly get. So I've got to work to get that next card. Like, that makes Magic really cool. And I think it's easy to forget that. And I still really like that about it. Like, I know I just can't go get whatever cards I want. Like, I've got to think about it. And that thinking is what makes Magic way different from board games.
Yeah, I guess that's weird. But when you have a game that has a professional component to it, I feel that's where maybe that argument breaks down a little bit. Would you want to follow, I'm talking about American football, so not the soccer World Cup, is getting a left shoe is way more rare than having a right shoe. So hey, maybe if you're a player, you only have one shoe unless you really want to spend a lot of money on it. I think it's a little different where, from a casual standpoint, I agree 100% that it adds variety, it makes you more creative, where hey, I can't afford to buy a Black Lotus, I need to make the best deck that I can with the cards that I have or can get access to.
Yeah, that's something Conley can speak to, definitely a little different. Like, I've never had an issue of, I really want to play a competitive deck and I need to find these cards now, which happens for every event for lots of players, because I see it on my Facebook feed light up, like, does anybody have XYZ that I can borrow for the weekend? For me as a casual player, I generally try to find one of the cards that I find most compelling and useful for Commander, and I just keep piling them into my box. And for me, it's always exciting to find, like a foil Russian Angel of Despair. Like, that to me sounds really, really sexy and cool, and I want to get that version of a card. I'm going to use that one in my black-white Commander decks, and it's going to be great. So for me, the barrier is all about finding the coolest version that I want to have for later. Obviously, when you're talking about competing in an event and going to a tournament to win money, like the analysis of like a pro team, like what if left shoes were way more expensive than right shoes? It's not, to me, that analogy doesn't work. It's more like amateur competitions. Like, I'm going to go to a snooker competition where you've got to bring your own pull sticks. Well, does your ability to control the ball, is it impacted by the quality of the pull sticks and the type of pull sticks you use? Probably. Like, I don't know that much about it, but I would assume that there's some relevance behind the weight of the pull cue and other factors that tie into how you handle the ball and your trajectory and angle and what you're doing with the actual action of striking a cue ball. So the question is it fair that some players can't bring, the same quality gear? I think that's...
I'd say yes, because I mean, if you're looking at professional things, I guess you're hoping to see the skill of the player, not, his pool cue is not a crooked piece of wood he found in the woods. Well, that guy has like a titanium pool cue.
Yeah, and I think the question is the tournament designed to find the empirically best player in the room? And I think if your answer to that is yes, it is to identify the empirically greatest player in the room, then ideally you want every player to have effectively identical gear. If the question you're trying to ask is which player will find a way to win the top prize, suddenly the question of is all the gear equal isn't there, because now it's do I bring certain gear because I expect other people to bring certain gear. Suddenly the access to cards is relevant only in conjunction with the information about what other cards people are going to bring. And that's kind of like the metagame of an event is, if I'm expecting other people to have this deck, I would want to bring different cards. I would want to have a different deck anyway. So obviously Conley has much more, probably has different thoughts about that and can go into kind of some more detail around that. But, for me as an observer of an event, if the event is just, can you show up with magical cards and prove that you can win the tournament, I don't really have much sympathy if you qualify and you choose to show up for an event, but you can't find the cards. And obviously there's a lot of extenuating factors and circumstances, like in South America, cards are, a little harder to come by. Apparently, there aren't as many stores. It's not like there are game stores local here where like you can go downtown Minneapolis and there's what, like three different game stores. Area.
Well, there's probably even more than that. That's, it's have some sort of access to probably a wider variety of cards. So, right. Yeah, so there'd be huge access.
Yeah, and it's my understanding that's not necessarily the case in Europe, although Europe has, better access to mail, so like you can order cards. South America doesn't have the same type of resources. Japan doesn't have the same type of resources. So that meta discussion of is the ability to have access to cards, I think, is different from when you're at the event. Should everyone have the same access to cards? I don't know. I think that's a little different.
Oh, like you said, we'll kind of table it for right now. But I'm curious to hear what Conley says. And of course, if anybody wants to email in or tweet us, I would be curious to hear, because I think maybe all three of us actually come from, for Adam, me, and Conley, come from probably fairly different points on how we view this. But Adam's also a nudist too, so I don't really trust most of what he says on anything.
I am not a nudist, but I am a subscriber to the ideology: home is where you don't wear pants. Like I am currently, I have put in my long working day, and the first thing I want to do when I get home is just rip off that belt, drop my trousers, step out of them neatly, and
do you watch The Goldbergs, the sitcom? You probably enjoy it, because that is literally like the main thing that the dad does every day that gets home.
That's like the main thing human people do. Like, you just go home and you want to relax. I've
never taken off my pants like the first thing as I come in my house. That's weird.
You're a human monster, Tom. But let's go to the mailbag. I don't want to miss the mail, because it looks like we're already 40 minutes in, so I want to make sure we don't miss our mail.
All right. Well, I mean, if you want to start off here, Adam, we'll just maybe kind of flip-flop, go every other?
Sure.
I can read them all if you want to. It doesn't matter.
No, so it looks like we got an email from Kai.
I'm not sure what this one's about. So
I don't have the context, but it just says those little tubs of Nutella with the foil peel off lid that come with little plastic spatula thingy to eat with it. Amazing. Yeah, so nice. I think this must be Best Snack. So this must be a tangent to my Mobius tangent about the the cracker jacked.
Snacks. Okay, that fits. So I was trying to remember
somebody's just like, I love them snacks.
I'm trying to remember what we talked about that would have related to that, but that makes sense. That brings it back then. So it was a Mobius email. So next we have an email from Dinesh. It says, subject is boning it up with baby powder. So you know it's going to be a good email. It says, hey guys, I used to listen.
Boned it up.
Boned it up.
Even though boning up with baby powder potentially sounds really wrong. But hey guys, I used to listen to Monday Night Magic back in the day before what I called the cast now as the Dark Times. I was skeptical if the cast, I'm assuming he's talking about MTG Potpourri, would be as good as before, but I was greeted with the warm inner thigh baby powder banter of the good old days. These are the best podcasts I listen to. I would say the best magic podcast, but it is more of a random subject with regular side tangents of magic. That is a perfect way of describing it, actually. That's spot on. I can confirm that boning up for exams is a regularly used idiom. I grew up in both Iowa and Texas, so it's not just a Midwest thing. Are you ever going to do live cast like you did with Monday Night Magic or Eminem? And the answer is yes. We do plan to revisit it probably in the near future because those podcasts were a boatload of fun. And that's how Conley was kind of first got into podcasting because he called into a live Monday Night Magic show.
Oh, you popped Conley's podcasting cherry.
We did. Yeah. I can't remember if it was like 200 or what because you usually did the live ones every 50 episodes. But it was one of those. And yeah, we was like, hey, Conley's got a good voice. Yeah, I don't remember kind of where he was in like the pro career at that point, to be honest. But yeah, he was fun to talk to, so we got him on the podcast. All right, you're up next.
I'm just boning up for example as a regularly used idiom. So I don't count things from Texas. When a Texan says this is how it is, I don't believe that because Texas acts like its own little fiefdom. Like,
yeah, but he said Iowa too.
Like to pretend things like women have less rights than, like, you know, like the fetuses that they're sometimes forced to carry for rapists. So, you know, I don't necessarily think that Texas is the greatest baseline for saying something's a regularly used idiom. But Iowa is pretty much classic Americana. So
it's wholesome. Iowa
is
wholesome.
Don't want to believe it. Like, Iowa is, like, I think, like, wholesome, like you know, I guess I almost think like the Midwest. Like, it's not quite, but I'm just imagining, like, you know, like a farmer on a tractor with a beautiful girl and they're like making potatoes, which sounds like Idaho, but I just imagine like Midwesty.
Okay. I want more people to email in saying, yes, that is commonly used because I think it is. I did not make it up on that podcast. So thank you, sweet. Dinesh.
I just opened the next email and I got super lucky. So this was my question, which was about the magic swag. Like what is the swag that you love? And so this came from Brandon. This is my prized deck box that I use. It's the Necronomicon from the Evil Dead series.
It's pretty slick. It's pretty cool.
I got it from a guy on Etsy. He makes a lot of cool deck boxes. They're a bit heavy, but totally worth it. Every time it's out, people at the table say how sweet it looks. P.S. I did not pay $100 for it. His prices went up. Still pretty awesome, though. Want your stuff. I mean, that's capitalism 101. When you sell sweet stuff and you can charge more for it and still sell it, you should charge more for it. That's what makes capitalism great. But this looks really sweet. I think we can probably throw some of these images in the show notes, or at least one of these. But
it
looks like a wooden box that's like a book. It's got it looks like it has a red ribbon to help open it.
Yeah, it's like a bookmark.
Red ribbon like binds the box together. Maybe that's what it's doing. But it looks like a slot for like two commander decks. Like nice.
That's what I would say. Two 100 deck slots sort of for it with sleeves. I mean, kind of looking at the pictures here. So that is, it probably would be heavy if it's that big, but it's a pretty impressively spot on kind of recreation of the Necronomicon from the Evil Dead movies. It's impressive. So that is probably
Evil Dead was where I ran into Bruce Campbell, and I always dreamed of having a chainsaw for a hand. So this is really sweet.
Have you watched any of his like more recent movies, like My Name is Bruce or any of that stuff, where he literally plays himself in a B horror movie?
No, I saw that he was cast for that, but I didn't see that.
Bubba Hotep is also
pretty good. I did catch him on bits and pieces of Burn Notice when I would catch episodes of that on USA, and still really enjoy him. Big fan of that.
Yeah, so if you're looking to get a little more Bruce Campbell, I would recommend either My Name is Bruce or Bubba Hotep is also another really good Bruce Campbell movie. Let's see. Oh, I get the next one. What's the next one? Okay. This one also is very, very cool because it also relates to a previous podcast. As we have, this says episode 11. This is from Adrian St. John. It goes, here's my favorite MTG swag. And it's a picture of a, basically a magic Rubik's cube where you can see three sides from the picture. One side is all blue mana symbols. One side is red mana symbols. And the other side, I think it just says Magic the Gathering. I'm not sure exactly what it says on that side. But he says, I got it for my birthday a couple of years ago, and I'm donating it to an auction to help support Mariah, who we mentioned, you know, who had the spinal cord injury, to help kind of support money for her recovery. Conley mentioned this. He says, also, I thought I'd let you know that JudgeCast just came out with an episode 94, and it is titled Potpourri Party. Your vernacular is catching on in the MTG world.
Yes!
Yes. Yes. So suck it, Conley, since you're not here to defend yourself. Thanks, as always. Y'all do great work, Adrian. So that one literally also made my day, because potpourri is a great word that should be used more.
It's so versatile.
Who doesn't like the word potpourri? I think, you know, from grandmas to the manliest of men, potpourri is a usable word. There's so, one left. It's all over you, Adam.
One left. It's pretty straightforward. It's from Clay. This would totally be a potpourri hoodie if one was available, but there was no attachment.
So Clay, so please, Clay, I'm curious.
We want to see it. What this send is. It. Send it in. You're going to drive us nuts unless it's just your like insidious plan to begin to drive us insane. So I don't know what it is. I'm just going to imagine that it was a zip up hoodie that had Kevlar overlapping Kevlar plates. So basically, it was like an armored hoodie, and it had like my face on it. That's what I imagine would be like.
So I went the opposite way. I was in
the potpourri hoodie.
I was envisioning like basically one of those like garbage bags that people would wear in the front row of like a Gallagher performance, just with all the crap that was sprayed onto it. That's what I had in my mind for an MTG potpourri hoodie.
You mean a bum's poncho?
Yeah, basically, it's those like cheap ponchos that you would like your dad has in the emergency kit in the car that. We all wore them at some point.
It doesn't actually work as a poncho. Like the one time you need it, like, oh, you got to change a tire in the rain, and like you put it on, it does not keep you dry at all.
It just funnels the water basically down the neck hole to make you more wet. It basically concentrates the rain into the part where you least want it, which is your body. But I guess we didn't use that. We just literally had a garbage bag that we ripped a hole in. We didn't even have we weren't fancy enough to actually buy the poncho. We made our own with garbage bags.
Yeah, that is a bum's poncho. Like you just punch a hole in a plastic bag. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever been to like a big retailer. Like back when they used to have like the supersized plastic bags. Like sometimes you would see people like wear those too. Like you could just like punch three holes in them and like put it on as like kind of like a plastic vest.
Okay, well I would say as a child I routinely wore a bum's poncho then, if that's what a bum poncho is.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I call it. I don't know if there's an official term for it. I'm just imagining a garbage bag poncho.
Yes. I would love to see the picture, but in my mind, it's bum poncho, front row Gallagher Gallagher performance. He's just hit the watermelon. That's what it looks like.
So what are our email topics? We email us about Magic 2015 previews.
Yeah, well, basically, what would you, if you, you could go realistic, you can go pie for the sky. What would, in your mind, what would be a cool thing they could do to maybe sort of spice up or potentially change how they preview, you know, upcoming sets? A couple other ones too. Oh, cool combos. We thought for, you know, our card, maybe in Commander or anything else like that for the,
or just any Magic 2015 previews. Cause there's going to be other ones, you know, like, cause we're going to record in about a week and we'll have basically a whole week of that first preview week out. So we should have some really spicy things. Like I can't imagine we won't see the new like a new Garrick or a new Planeswalker or something that first week. So I think we're gonna have something cool to talk about.
Yeah, and I would say I would like to continue, Adam, your question of Magic swag, because even just the few ones we got this week is really cool. So I would love, keep sharing your Magic swag and we will talk about it, and unless it's covered with dicks, put it in the show notes. I have two dick limit for your Magic swag pictures. That's a Gathering Magic. It's in their terms of service. Two dick maximum. Excuse me.
And just to be super helpful, because we want to be able to share the sweet swag that you send in, please take your own picture and send it to us. We don't want to use anybody else's pictures or somebody who took a photo of something and didn't intend to have it shared elsewhere. You know, we don't want to get into trouble with somebody and have them get really angry that you sent in their picture and we ended up using it. So just take your own picture of your swag, because you own it, and we'd love to share it and show other people too.
And if you want to send those sweet, hopefully dick-free swag pictures, send them to MTG Potpourri. That's MTG P-O-T P-O-U-R-R-I at gatheringmagic.com. Or, and if they wanted to tweet you one of these pictures, where would they do that?
Stunningly different at MTG Potpourri on Twitter.
I like it. I like it. We're consistent with all this. It would have been funny if I had, one of us had mistyped in MTG Potpourri when we registered that Twitter handle with like three R's or one R or something. Be like, okay, this is the one that has one R. Just remember it. So, yep. Thank you, Adam. It was a very fun podcast. Conley totally missed out. He's going to be sad because I know he's.
Well, this is the part that he's going to miss out on the most on, because I think we need to talk about and finally clear the air about this you're, nudist business.
You're nudist. You're just sick obsession with nudism. It's frankly, it's almost, that's actually why we didn't podcast for a month, because Conley and I we had to talk about it. We just had to come to terms that, hey, we accept this about Adam and we're going to move forward.
Look, my therapist made it clear we were not to talk about the nude month.
So this all comes about because literally this week I was at clinic, and my clinic is in Rome, Minnesota, as I found out is very close to where our clinic is. It's apparently one of the two biggest nudist resorts in all of Minnesota. This is just a bizarre piece of information to learn about. Kind of, we've been working for about 3.5 years. So I, of course, went on their website, which of course was blocked by the filter at my clinic's intranet. So I'm curious what the IT people think of my browsing habits now at work. But I pulled it up at home, and it's called the Oakwood Club. Apparently, it was founded in the 1940s. So I think that is very interesting. But it's a resort, so it's not like it's not a place you go live permanently, but it sounds like you actually apply and have to become a member, or it sounds like they do background checks and everything else. You're just not sort of some weird gawker. But yeah, they talk a lot about, they call it a nudist lifestyle, the nudist experience, which I thought was very interesting. And if you go to their websites, there are photos of naked people on it, which I guess shouldn't be a huge surprise. And they do include Wi-Fi, which I thought was good. And if you go further down the rabbit hole, as they mentioned, they were part of the AANR. So, of course, I had to Google this, and there is the American Association for Nude Recreation. It's AANR.com. If you have about 15 minutes, it's fun to go through and read like their press room and member benefits and stuff like that. Is entertaining to watch.
Make sure you do this in incognito mode on your own device or from home. Don't Chrome, get fired at work.
Yeah, if you have Chrome,
Tom's advice.
Yeah, do Chrome, you do the incognito tab where it has the little GameSpy looking guy on it. Just, hey, don't Google this. This is sort of the don't Google this section of the podcast, but it is very interesting to read.
There's always a don't Google this section of the podcast. So you're saying that they call themselves family friendly.
Yeah. Right? So if you actually go, they say this is, I mean, they said they have families that vacation regularly at these. And so we were kind of talking about, we both have very young kids. To me, it's probably because I wasn't really exposed to this as a child, but I don't know if it seems wrong. It just seems so bizarre that I couldn't even, it's just hard for me to comprehend.
So that bizarreness, Tom. So here's my point. My point is,
it doesn't mean it's wrong.
That nudism is like a Disney World, right? That's not the argument that I would make. So the idea that being naked as a family is bizarre comes from the construction that you've been taught your whole life. Nakedness is bizarre.
Oh, it's evil and dirty and filthy and wrong. Right?
There is nothing about, this is moral objectivity. This is like meta. So if you don't agree with me and you don't understand, go back to Texas. Trust me, we'll still be friends. That the idea, just simply choosing that idea that nudism is wrong inherently, and but there's nothing about it that makes it inherently evil. Like, you can't say nudism is evil. Like, it's just not it has to be an axiom that you assume. Like, there's nothing that just makes being naked evil, because as you know, with young children, they don't really have any qualms about being naked or being around you naked.
Oh no, my 2.5
around out of shower or bath. Like genitalia and the idea that you have to be covered around other people and you only get uncovered with respect to engaging in intimacy or cleanliness, that there are these constructions about being naked.
Yeah, and shit, shower, sex. Those are the only times you're naked.
Right. And so what I'm willing to say is, I don't think I will ever vacation at a nudist resort. Like, resorts are great, and I love hanging out and having, drinks with little umbrellas brought to me and just getting completely smashed, and it's only noon, so I get to sober up and have dinner too. awesome. Like, the resorts are great. I don't think I would ever take my family to a nudist resort, because that's probably not something that my wife is down for, although I'd be very down for my wife being nude around me more. but the idea that you that nudity itself, and that people that are nudists and would share those values, as they probably, you know, any family would share the values the parents have with their children. They probably do that. I know Diana and I are. You know, I don't think it makes it inherently wrong or evil. You know, so it's bizarre, and it seems strange to you, but it's only because we've been taught that nudism is wrong. Like, if our parents took us to the nudist resort, we'd probably be like, yeah, I'll see you the next year, Tom.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. It was just maybe sort of think about my own sort of, you know, upbringing and be like, interesting. That just wouldn't have been something that I would have even considered. Not that it was wrong. It just didn't even enter the equation. It's like telling me there's 27 letters in the alphabet. Just be like, no, there's 26. Like, nope, there's 27, and because the last one's naked. Like, I'm confused now. And also, I give credit to the AANR, where they actually have an entire section about veterans, like military veterans and nudism, which I find very interesting as I'm reading it right now. It can also apparently vote
for the... Here's the best part now, Tom, is before you encountered this, you never thought about, you know, nudist resorts. Now, every time you think about a family vacation, you're going to think about and probably joke about going to the nudist resort that's nearby. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll just be like,
yep, it will never leave your mind now. It will be with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, so the AANR, thank you. It made for a very interesting weekend clinic as we had many discussions about the nudist lifestyle. And just because, yeah, I'm assuming I was probably, you know, kind of rural Minnesota. I would say there's probably a fairly common upbringing in that area that I thought was an interesting place for them to have the nudist resort. So I'm guessing most people that attend there are probably not from that area, would just be my hunch. And also Minnesota, especially in the summer, there are a lot of mosquitoes. I'd say that'd be one reason I would support that wearing clothes as a benefit in the summer. Because if you got bit itchy in certain places, that could actually be sort of miserable. So imagine getting like a bite on the underside of like your testicles. That would be like one of the worst places you get a mosquito bite.
There we go. I knew I didn't need to egg you to that eventual conclusion.
Yeah, there you go. So thank you, everybody. We love it. Nudism. If you're a nudist and you play Magic at a nudist resort, obviously I'd love to hear about it. You know,
no pictures, but we'd love the story.
Yeah. Or if you have some really amazing swag, yeah, I'll take that. But again, email us, mtgpopery@magic.com. You can tweet us at mtgpopery. Yep, that's right. And join us next week. And hopefully Conley will be talking about how he won Grand Prix Chicago when we record this next week. No pressure to Conley.
And so before we go, that's Tom Gustafson.
Gustafson. Wait, whatever. Close enough.
Doctor veterinarian Tom.
Yes. Yeah. Devin, ask Devin Lowe. He knows. I had to correct him on that one.
I'm Adam Sidorsky, @_Stibbs on Twitter, all over GatheringMagic.com, as well as the commander columnist on DailyMDG.com.
I am only here, so. If you're here, you know me. Otherwise, you don't. So there you go. But I know Adam. And I read his stuff most of the time. So Adam, thank you again for joining me. It was a very fun podcast. Both of us have young kids. We are probably going to go to bed.
Agreed. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.